Hey everyone, it's Nelly here. How are you doing? This podcast was recorded in the council area known as Darabin in Melbourne. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri people and their elders past, present and emerging. A few quick things. This episode is with my old friend Danny Blay. Just a bit of a trigger warning, it does involve a discussion at the beginning about family violence because Danny worked in that area, as did I. So we talk about that for about 10 or 15 minutes. If you want to skip past that, please feel free to do so. You may also find it interesting and maybe even informative and therapeutic, but the call is yours. Now, for live shows, please go to nellythomas.com, follow the links. We just did another one at the Malthouse Theatre and, oh, it was bloody fabulous. We've got more coming later in the year. Of course, if you want a particular guest for a live show, do let me know. I'm always open to ideas. Now, we just did another live Zoom event as well with our Patreon and Acast Plus paid subscribers. We had co-hosts Adam Richard and Alice Fraser join us, as well as some wonderful listeners subscribers. We had a great chat live in real time where you get to ask questions, we shared stories, we did all the things. It was bloody beautiful. So we do those regularly, as well as bonus episodes and some other stuff for paid subscribers. So it's only $5 a month. Hopefully some of you will consider joining up because it helps me to keep the lights on. Now, last but not least, you know it, this is a sex, dating and relationships podcast for adults. If you don't like swearing, it's really going to give you the shit. So off your fuck.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice. Dear Nelly, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nelly, I'm eager to hear your point of view. Dear Nelly, there's a lot to explore. Dear Nelly, when you're 40 or more. Dear Nelly, so I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Alright, welcome to Dear Nelly, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40, and we are joined today by my friend and colleague, Mr. Danny Blay. Hello, Danny.
Hello, Nelly. Long time.
Long time, first time caller, long time listener.
Indeed.
Long time friend. I was trying to think today, was it 2005 we met or even earlier?
The No Means No Show.
Yeah, so it would have been
around there.
Early 2000s. So for context, you're not, I mean, you certainly used to speak on the radio and all of that kind of stuff, but you're not like a comedy mate.
No.
What's your professional background?
Well, this most recent profession.
Yes.
For the last 26 years is effectively working with men who use violence towards women and family members.
Yeah.
So in that kind of broader men's behaviour change space and policy space and providing training to workers to better respond to men who may be using violence at home but they're not really sure that they had to respond.
Yeah.
There's a lot of anxiety from practitioners around saying or doing the wrong thing and making things worse. So that's the kind of space I inhabit. I was the CEO of No to Violence and the Men's Referral Service for 10 years or something. And now just out there on my own doing stuff.
Doing contract stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting space because I think, you know, the conversation about family violence, violence against women, some people know it as domestic violence, usually, and we, you know, you and I have both hopefully been part of trying to shift this narrative, has usually been focused on the woman, you know, and why she doesn't leave or why she does leave or whether she should stay or what she's doing. And part of, in broad terms, your work is looking at changing the behaviour of perpetrators or understanding. I mean, do we still use that language? What's the language now?
Well, it's come back into kind of focus and fashion again. I don't like using the words perpetrators and victims.
Yeah.
Mainly because that kind of describes those people as whole human beings.
Yeah.
Whereas we know that there's many other aspects to them as people, but there's something about their experience or their behaviour that needs to be addressed. But yeah, also, I mean, so the trickiness around this work is not necessarily working with men who use violence and getting them to think differently about respectful relationships, but the link between gender inequality and how that's a primary driver of men's violence towards women can get really messy and complicated, and that's where a lot of resistance can pop up in training groups and in behavior change programs and socially as well. There's still the mythology around what's normal for men and normal for women, what's normal for boys and girls, when we know it's all confected and made up, and it's the way we've been socialized since day one. And so certainly for a lot of men, it can be a big debilitating challenge to be confronted with the notion that they've turned into a kind of person only because of the way in which they've socialized and observed the world, not just their parents and their family, but the broader world, school, work, TV, the whole thing. And, you know, a lot of it is just made up and for the purpose of maintaining the status quo in terms of patriarchy.
It's so fascinating, isn't it? Because I reckon you're right. It's that we're really still comfortable with the idea of, like, and I'm talking in broad brush strokes, okay, that bloke hits his wife because his dad was aggro.
Yeah.
You know, rather than kind of going, there's a whole heap of systems and culture and relation to each other that facilitates and permits that.
Yeah.
And that, how do we draw the connection between calling the AFLW a bunch of girls and him hitting his wife?
Yeah, yeah. And the notion that so many minor little interactions over a very, very long time has influenced that.
Yes.
And the difference between, I mean, I talk a lot about male privilege in my training. And I kind of chuckle a bit when I've got a group of men and women and I'm preaching to the choir when I'm talking about male privilege, because the women in the room have experienced this all the time. What was it like to be a girl at school? What's it like in the workplace, in the licensed premises, all that kind of stuff? And the vast majority of men don't have to think about it.
No.
You know, I often think and I often say, you know, my greatest privilege is being completely unaware of my male privilege.
Yeah.
I don't have to.
Yeah.
Works for me. It's no impact on me unless I consciously go out and look for it.
Yeah.
So my invitation to men is go out and look for it.
Yeah.
Go and be curious about why is it this way and not another way.
Yeah.
Why is it that when you go to work, women have spent an extra half an hour or so and hundreds of dollars more on their appearance than you've had to?
Yeah.
Where'd that come from?
Yeah. And worse, don't then go, how silly.
Yeah.
You know, and dismiss them. You know, I'll give you an example. I spoke at a conference a couple of months ago. And I, long story short, I went to check into the hotel because it was in another state, and I had lost my credit card, or I couldn't find my credit card. And the hotel staff basically went, oh, don't worry, we'll check you in later. Like just go into your room and, you know, you can pay for it tomorrow or whatever. And part of that conference, I had spent most of the day with a few Aboriginal workers who worked in Aboriginal health. And it was so stark. I thought to myself, if one of those women had rocked up here and had lost her, there's no way they would have let her in. There's absolutely no way. So, you know, there's plenty of privilege in different areas, but you're unconscious of it if you are the beneficiary of it most of the time.
Yeah.
I was going to go somewhere else, but I'm going to pick up on something you said. In Armchair Expert, I always present a meme or something. One reminded me of you because I reckon you said this to me Geez, it'd be nearly 20 years ago, and it had a profound impact on my thinking. Even though I'd worked in family violence, you were talking about, and I'm paraphrasing, so correct me if I'm wrong, but often when men come into behaviour change, they will minimise and say things like, you know, well, I didn't hit her much, I just pushed her, or I only hit her occasionally, or I just grabbed her, or whatever. Like, they're minimising the violence. And you said to me, but that's not the question. The question is anyone in the house scared of you?
Yeah, look, it's something that I learned a long time ago in understanding how men will respond to our curiosity about what's going on at home. It happens all the time in assessing men for behaviour change programs, or, you know, on the phone at telephone counselling or in programs, what we refer to as invitations to collude. And by and large, men have become very practiced in their own world to justify what's gone on, to make themselves feel better about it and not take responsibility. Mm. So the minimisation of it, it's not that bad, it's not like I hit her. Mm. You know, the quote, it's not like I hit her, might be factually correct, but it's irrelevant because whatever you did had an impact. You know, the justification around, lots of men will talk about how stressed they are at work, how if they can't afford the rent this week, you know, I just get so angry sometimes, it's just the way I am.
I just lost it.
The blaming, that, you know, she pushes my buttons, she nags, she's crap, the house is a complete disaster when I come home, and the denial of she's making it all up. Or the neighbours are making it all up. They're just getting, they're out to get me. They rang the coppers, they didn't have to. All that stuff distances a man from the impact of their behaviour towards other people, and not just their female partner or partner at all, but children if they're around as well. Yes. I'm going to push that stuff away because that's too hard to think about. I'm not going to think about, I'm a good bloke. I know I'm a good bloke because I work hard and I help out at the footy club and all those, those kinds of things. I'm going to push that stuff away. And what our job is to invite them back to actually think about that and reflect back on those experiences. And what was it like for your partner and or your children when that happened? Tell me exactly how far away from her were you? What was the look on her face? What was your language like? What was the volume like? Your body language, all that kind of stuff. And the purpose of all that is trying to start dredging up some empathy for those people who they ostensibly love and cherish and want to stay with, usually. And not blame them for all of that kind of experience. And that can be very, very distressing and difficult for a lot of men. And we have to acknowledge that and not just think they're all a bunch of bastards and we should lock them all up, because that is not what, by and large, most women want, most partners, most kids.
Doesn't work.
Well, it doesn't work. It doesn't change anything. Yeah. It doesn't change anything. And we know that most of these guys aren't psychopaths. We know that they are socialized, mostly educated, working, engaged people who have qualities that were attractive to their partners in the first place. And so that's why, you know, again, I don't refer to perpetrators, because there's all this other stuff that those women see in those men, but there's that little bit about their behavior, not their anger, but their behavior that needs to be addressed and needs to be, we need to be cautious about in terms of assessing risk.
The language. Yeah, totally. And I think there's a couple of interesting things for me. Like, I remember watching, I think you and I discussed this, this is years ago, like in the 90s, seeing Oprah of all people talking about her grandmother used to belt her. And I mean, really, you know, lay into her. And she was talking in an interview. She said her grandma would say after, "Now don't you cry." And she said that because she said grandma didn't want to see what she'd done.
Yep.
And as you were talking about, like, no one wants to think of themselves as a DV perpetrator. No one wants to think of themselves as a violent husband, as that kind of man, right? So there's a whole heap of mental gymnastics going on, right? So everyone in the house, and that's why I loved what you said to me, everyone in the house might be walking around terrified of you, waiting for you to punch a wall, waiting for you to kick a dog, waiting for you to demean them or do something non-physical. But in your own mind, you're like, but I don't smash her.
Yeah.
So I'm not one of them.
And I'm well within my rights to do that.
Yeah.
Because look what you've done to me. Look what you did. You know,
if I did lose it, it's because you did it.
Yeah. Yeah. No responsibility. There's no issue of choice around how I behave or not. It's just how it is.
Yeah. So two, I guess, professional questions for you. One, if there's someone listening who recognises that atmosphere in their own house and they're on the receiving end of it, shall we say, what would you say? And if they know someone who's doing that, what would you say?
First and foremost, I would be recommending that people seek professional advice. It's not help and therapy, but just have a chat to somebody who's going to understand what the dynamics look like. In Australia, 1-800-RESPECT, which is 1-800-737-732, is a good place to start to just have a chat about what's going on. You're not really sure about what's going on. You're a bit concerned about your safety or the safety of your children. The relationship's not traveling well. It's good to check it out. Mm. But by and large, what often happens in these circumstances is that people will seek out someone that they trust to try and broach a bit of a conversation. Mm. It's one of the contentions I have with schools around this space where a school will say, oh, look, we've identified these three teachers to be the ones who will respond to accusations of violence or sexual assault or something. And, you know, I suggest to them that that's not what the kids will necessarily need. Mm. Children will go and speak to someone they trust, regardless of what the badge on their uniform says or their position.
Mm.
So sometimes, you know, when it comes to women experiencing violence, they will mention something that can raise your antenna and go, this sounds a bit weird. Mm. I'm not really sure what that's about. Mm. And it's important that given that they've trusted you to just suggest something that requires a bit more exploration, that we do that in a manner that's not judgmental, mm. In a way that they understand that you are actively listening to them, you know, by, you know, the nods and saying, you know, I hear that, and, you know, so what you're saying is, so they actually know that you're listening to them intently.
And you're not going, you should.
And definitely not be telling women what they should and shouldn't do. I mean, part of the reason why they might be having this conversation with you is that they're sick and tired of being told what to do all the time or what not to do.
Yeah.
The important thing to convey in these circumstances is for women to be able to make informed decisions about her and her children. Mm. And you might not be able to do that. You don't know what that is. Mm. But just for you to be saying that sounds really hard, and I'm concerned about you, and I'm concerned about your kids. Mm. Would it be okay if I go and find some information that I can get back to you around this? Not disclosing your identity to anybody, but I'd like to help you out. I don't know what to do, but I'd like to go and find out. Would it be okay if I go and find that out for you?
Yeah.
And also in amongst that, if it becomes apparent that risk is pretty high, if she's physically injured, or she's talking about physical violence or violence towards the children, then, you know, can merely talk about, well, we need to think about your safety. Mm. Is there somewhere you can go? You can go with the kids. Can you take your important files and documents with you, whatever that might be?
While we work this out,
also not being afraid to call police. Mm. By and large, police are much, much better at responding to this stuff than they were even 15, 20 years ago. Mm. You know, most jurisdictions now, there are codes of practice for police that they have to respond. It's not just another domestic and ignore it. And again, there's significant expertise in police services these days to respond to that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think picking up on a phrase that you use that I think is really important for people to remember, let's say you're in this situation or you know someone who is, the reason you need professional input here is that a risk assessment is critical. Because if you say to someone, and this is the instinct of a lot of people, if you've got a friend or a sister or a brother or whoever who's in this situation, leave, that may actually put them at significant risk. Right, there needs to be some kind of assessment of how you leave, where you go to, how that can be done safely, a whole range of that. There is expertise available rather than you thinking bad situation, go. That's the answer.
Or the flip side of, it can't be that bad if you haven't left.
Also that, minimising, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, if we have a little bit of a think about what the pressures on many women are to not leave, dependent they are to have a roof over their head and for their kids, all that kind of stuff, how they're going to feed themselves, where they're going to live, who's going to be, believe me. They're real dilemmas. It's becoming even more acute these days with, you know, the whole housing nonsense
going on.
That, you know, the thought of living on your own or being a single mum with kids in a flat that's 45 kilometres away from work is horrifying.
So listen, empathise, don't judge, get expert advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll put links in the show notes to 1-800-RESPECT and some other services. Yeah.
But that's not necessarily the same response to men.
Yeah, right. Tell me why.
So as we mentioned before, men are very accustomed to justifying their own experience and their own behaviour and pushing responsibility away.
Yeah.
It's not their fault. It's not their problem. It's everybody else's problem. This is normal. What most men who use violence towards their partners will know is that it's wrong and that they don't want it to continue the way it's going. They will, in a short term, it's kind of in the cycle of violence that we use sometimes in training and working with men, the remorse phase for men can be really real after a violent incident of, oh, my God, I'm such a dickhead. I can't believe I did that again. I can't believe she's going to leave me. She's going to take the kids. It's going to be awful. I'm going to lose the house, all that kind of stuff. That's real. And sometimes men can suggest that's where they're at to their mates or workmates. And that might just be really little things like, I had another bust up with the missus last night.
Yeah.
The response to that can be, whatever. The tacit kind of message that that man might get was, oh, that's normal and nobody really cares. But if we say, oh, really? Can you tell me a bit more about what happened? If we're providing messaging to him that I'm a bit concerned about you, but I'm also really concerned about your partner and your kids, that's getting him to start empathising a bit more for their experience. And again, not accusing them, not judging them, not calling them names, not being completely shocked and stunned and horrified by what's going on. But again, you know, considering how men might be responding by pushing responsibility and choice away, and you bring it back saying, actually, you know, you're talking about being really stressed or you had a few cans last night and that's why it happened. But we're, you know, we've had a few cans today and you're still stressed today, but you haven't had a crack at me. What's the difference?
What's going on?
And again, if you want things to be better, I don't know what that might be, but would it be okay if I go and do some research and I can get back to you and you'll get some phone numbers and away you go? And that can be, you know, looking out for your mate, your male friend, because you're concerned about him. But, you know, our primary objective is looking out for the safety of his partner and his children.
Honestly, Danny, can you imagine in that scenario, if you're at work and that is disclosed from one, you know, let's name it, one straight guy to another, imagine if the other dude went, geez, was she scared? Do you think she was scared? Like even asking that question would be so profound, I think, as you say, rather than that risk of collusion of like, God, the missus drives me up the wall and sometimes I fly off the handle. They may actually be talking about, oh, sometimes we have an argument or sometimes I'm moody. But if you are using violence, it's very easy to read that as collusion and approval.
Yeah. Really important. I remember I had someone who trained me decades ago, but you know, asked the question, "Do you think she was scared?" And a lot of men will go, "I don't know." And the response could be, "Well, if you did know, what would your answer be?" And of course, he knows. He knows precisely. That was the purpose of the behaviour.
Correct.
But let's draw that out of you. Let's get you taking some responsibility for that now, because that's
And asking that question is not, there's outliers that you'll never manage. Let's be clear on that. There's some people who are just going to be violent regardless of what happens. But we're talking about that movable center. Asking that question is also not an accusation. You're not going, shit, she was terrified. You're a monster.
Yeah.
But being able to just kind of go, oh, geez, how did she go with that? Was she scared?
Yeah.
You know, if you're punching walls or yelling or threatening to kick the dog, or, you know, the things that we don't think of necessarily as family violence. Were the kids scared? What'd they do?
Yeah, maybe. What do kids do when you come home?
Yeah, what do they do? That's right. Are they hiding under the bed?
Yeah.
Are they being quiet? You know, it's, yeah. Look, I know this is a heavy chat, but I think it's really important. Like, a lot of the calls that we get, because we are in that phase, Danny, aren't we? When you and I started working together, it was very much, we thought of violence as, you know, broken bones, black eyes. We've shifted a bit culturally. We understand a bit more about coercive control and, you know, non-physical forms of control and violence, but we're still not quite there either. And I notice sometimes we have callers ring in who kind of, after they've heard a certain discussion, will go, oh, shit, that is me.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's just, for me, one of the reasons I wanted to get you on is just an invitation for people to consider, just even on a basic level, you shouldn't be scared at home. If you're scared, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And to start looking at services, who you can talk to, questions, what, however you want to handle it, but to kind of face that in a way. Yeah.
Yeah. And also we need to take into account that, I mean, certainly my experience of working with women who've experienced violence is there's often a lot of shame.
Yeah.
And a lot of those women don't see their experiences have violence at all.
No.
I know women who have worked in the family violence sector for a long time who, you know, would go and get some counselling and therapy, and the therapist would say, look, it sounds like you're experiencing violence, which would absolutely floor them. So what the fuck are you talking about? I know this stuff inside out. I've been doing it for 20 years. So, well, let's pull this apart a bit. So, you know, the shame around that stuff and the resistance, and I'm better than that. I'm smart. I'm educated. Yep. I'm making money. I run a good house. My kids are awesome, all that kind of stuff, can sometimes get in the way. And that's where we as people in the community can be a little bit more helpful when we say, look, I'm a bit concerned about you. It doesn't sound right. Can open up the gateway to some safety.
Absolutely. And when you, you know, when you add on, and we get this a lot in the podcast, and this has been my experience as well, when you add on intersectionality, when you start talking about, well, if it's a same-sex relationship, if there's disability involved, if there is, you know, POC, whatever, all the things, there's all then other layers of, will I be believed? Will I be received at the service? Will the experts believe? What if it's not a man and a woman? What if it's a man and a woman and it's the other way around? What if it's two women? What if it's two men? What if the police are, I have not had racist treatment from the police? Like, there's a whole range of things that go into this, let alone that cultural overlay and the psychological wearing down that happens in those. You can be in that relationship and not know. That's the truth.
Yeah.
Oof. Okay. Now, normally I start with your, I'm going to pivot here. I think it'll be lighter. Normally I start with the guest dating history. We probably haven't got a huge amount of time, but I would like to get at least a pricey of, because you've been married a long time, my friend.
Yes. Yes.
How long you been married?
Been married 30 years this year.
30 years.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Shit balls. And how old are you?
55.
55. So you met your wife when you were 25, or you got married when you were 25?
We met when we were 14.
What?
We didn't talk to each other for, you know, another 6 years or something.
That is funny. Where did you meet?
At a youth group.
Oh, wow.
We started dating when I was 21. She was 20.
Yeah.
And we travelled and moved out, and that was the end of that.
So tell me before that, because I think that's so adorable. Between 14 and 20, like, did you have the hots for each other? Were you just, like, not able to approach? What was going on?
No, look, I was a baby, that's for sure, so I had no idea what was going on, and it wasn't on my radar as a 14-year-old. I was into footy and cars, and that's it.
Yeah.
My dating history is very brief.
Yeah.
Not a lot of opportunity.
Yeah.
Certainly nothing long term. The longest term was a high school dalliance that lasted, I don't know, about 4 or 5 months or something. And that was you know, that's it.
Yeah.
Couple of other little incidents of note.
That's cute. So
But then that was it.
you two get married mid-20s. You've been married 30 years. Congrats. You got two kids who grow up and flew the nest.
Yep.
Will you, because you and I have talked about this off air, will you come back on next time and talk about the empty nest feeling? Because
Yes.
I think we haven't got time for it now, but there's plenty of people listening who would have been shocked, I reckon, about their own response to their kids moving out.
Yep.
So we'll come back and do that. But I just wanted to give context
Yep.
for the advice I'm about to ask you to give. Are you ready to give some listener advice?
I'll try.
Hi, Nellie. I wanted to give you an update on the letter you read out in the episode with Scott Brennan, which was also repeated in producer Sammy's Best of 2023. To recap my situation, I am divorced in my mid-40s with two children.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Last year, I was living with a man who I loved and still do, but I didn't want to live with him anymore. He moved into my house and his daughter stayed a few nights a week. After 2 years of this arrangement, I realised that living together wasn't working and I was becoming resentful and anxious, so much so that my doctor put me on antidepressants. I am in perimenopause stage, so that may have been a factor, but needless to say, the antidepressants did not work. And the only thing left to do was to have a heart-to-heart about our living situation. I explained to him that I felt like I had lost who I was as a person and missed having my independence and space. Resentment was also building around finances, chores, and blending our two families. He was hurt by my decision, but eventually accepted it and moved out 4 months later. Scott said wanting my own space does not mean breaking up. I had no intention of breaking up with him, and asked him if he'd be willing to be in a relationship but live apart. If you Google it, it is called LAT, or living apart together. So many of our family and friends thought our situation was weird. However, Nellie said that my needs mean something.
Right, and I will tell you, well, I'm going to give you some context, Danny, just in case you and other listeners haven't heard the initial call. So the short story is that this woman had been married for a long time, got divorced, started dating within a year of breaking up the divorce, and relatively quickly this guy had moved in. The information we had at that time, it seemed as though he wasn't able to contribute anywhere near equally financially, and there was some concern about whether or not it was a sort of convenient housing situation. But either way, she was, as she's mentioned in her follow-up call, she was getting resentful. She wanted the space back. So she'd been in what I think was quite a claustrophobic marriage, had really enjoyed the independence and felt like she'd lost it. And I think both Scott and I were basically saying, that's okay, you know, like have a chat to him. You don't have to live together. You don't have to parent someone else's kids. I will say in very happy news, and then I'll ask your view, she's done a second follow-up call where she said it's going super well. So even though initially he had that reaction that I think a lot of people would have of like, why do you want me to move out and experience it as a rejection, they've actually made it work. They're still together. They live close by but not in the same house. And the short story is happy days.
Hmm.
Right? Well, so what do you think? Yeah.
Yeah, look. Excellent that it's worked out. Look, I've always been quite interested in thinking about the historical kind of social pressure for people to live together.
Yes.
And even that being refined further down as nuclear family.
Yes.
It's not that long ago that extended family lived together.
Yeah.
And we lived in communities and, you know, it takes a village to raise a child and all that kind of stuff. And it's only relatively recently that we've put ourselves in situations where we sit in a box with our partner and maybe two, three kids, and that's it. And anything other than that is weird and should be shunned. So, I mean, even that notion you talk about, there was discrepancies in income and sharing the load of chores and that kind of stuff. It's not that long ago where chores were a collective responsibility of not just that nuclear family or not just that couple. And when it's been whittled down to just that one couple, it can become inequitable pretty quickly, which obviously puts pressure on. I mean, I know a few couples of my generation who have been in those relationships for a very long time and have never lived together, and that's normal. But again, as we mentioned before, most of them can do that because they can afford to. And lots of people can't afford to do that. The other thing around that I often think about is, and women, single mums in particular, have mentioned this to me over the journey, is the pressure to have to go and partner up. And I've heard women talk to me about husband shopping. Because otherwise it's not normal. And the mythology, particularly around single mums bringing up boys, because if they do that, then the boys are just going to turn into little criminals. And you need, you know,
mums are too soft.
You need the positive male role model to teach boys how to be proper good men, which is demonstrably nonsense. The researchers tell us very clear that single mums, mums partnered with other women, are just as, if not better, at raising kids and boys as others statistically. But there's that massive social pressure where women in particular aren't allowed to be on their own. It feels like that men have much more permission to do that themselves.
Bachelor pad, Danny.
But also even socially, you know, in my when not long after Sandy and I got together and we started living together and a bunch of our mates started partnering off, I noticed that, you know, people were all working full-time or whatever. Come Saturday morning, a bunch of my male mates would get up at 7, pack the car and go and play golf. Or, you know, they'd go to the footy or they'd do stuff on their own or with other blokes, which was quite normal. That's what blokes did. But for women to do that, or for women to say, I want to have some time by myself, was just a bit odd.
Yeah, what's wrong with her?
So, you know, to just be mindful of where that social pressure is coming from. And, I mean, the other thing that that piqued my interest about that that call, the difference between her wanting to or not wanting to live with him versus her not wanting to live with another adult at all. And, you know, again, why do we have to live with other adults if we don't really want to? If we find an adult we want to live with, then great. If we're hanging out with an adult we like spending time with, but we don't want them in the house, and that's also cool. And we as men need to be mindful that that's, you know, that doesn't make you weird or unfair or withholding affection or that kind of stuff.
And I think in your language, it's all made up, right? So these ideas of household configurations, as you said, historically, like we're all banging on now about 25-year-olds still living at home. These cultures existing now, and certainly historically, where that would have been weird if they didn't. It's completely normal for extended family to live together, for the grandparents to be there, to, you know, all live in the same house, let alone next door or in the same suburb or whatever. And there's no reason that you can't apply that lens to this situation. If she is able to afford to live on her own, and that is preferable for her mental health and makes her a better parent, better partner, all the thing, who the fuck cares what the neighbors think? You know, like, good on you.
I mean, when you say it out loud, it's really weird,
isn't it?
But that's the social world that we live in.
Can't you imagine though? You can totally imagine. She sounds like she's similar age to you and I. You can imagine her at a barbecue, kind of going, "Yes, this is my partner of 3 years. We don't live together," and everyone going, "Why? What's wrong with him? What's wrong with you?" Like, what did he do something? Did you do something? Like, there is still, even among progressives, I reckon, there is still stigma around that stuff. As she said, And you can Google it. There is a big movement of LAT, living apart together. I interviewed a couple actually who've been together 35 years, who live in Tasmania, and they both have their own house. That's just one example. There's many others. But I reckon, you know, rip up the script. If this works for both of you, I'm glad that he was able to get past the idea that it was a rejection, because I didn't hear it as a rejection at all.
No.
I heard it as a woman who hadn't had autonomy for a long time and then got some, then gave it away and wanted it back. And that's not on him.
No, and also thinking that it's not that long ago that young women went from their parents' house to their husband's house.
Yeah.
And there was no independent living. You know, share housing, you know, certainly for my parents' generation was not a thing, where it's extremely normal, if not desirable.
Yeah.
Now. And great.
Yeah. And actually going back to your single mums, one of the things I hear from occasionally, which I absolutely love the idea of for single parents but also for older people, is that idea of reframing the concept of shared house from, oh, because I can't afford it, to, well, it takes a village. You know, if you've got two single mums with, you know, three, four, five kids between them, I can tell you logistically, in terms of costs of childcare and, you know, cooking and all the shit, that would be a lot easier and financially more viable. And the same, you know, in retirement. I can imagine living with four or five friends.
Well, that's something that we've been working on for a long time and got nowhere near close to making it happen. But
yeah,
it makes perfect sense. It just, you know, lives go in different directions and it's not always compatible or as compatible as it was 15 years ago, it seems.
Or it's still considered weird, I think. Like it takes someone to really kind of go, no, let's make this happen.
Yeah.
You know, and you occasionally do see that. I've got a friend whose grandma and five of her friends, and this takes money, I get it, I get it, the housing crisis. Anyway, they all bought, instead of going into retirement village, they all bought apartments in the same block, and they pay collectively between the six of them for a nurse and a cleaner to come once a week to check everyone's blood pressure and medications, and then a cleaner to clean everyone's house. Danny, they meet at 4 o'clock every day, drink gin and bloody play canasta, right? This is the dream.
Yeah. Look, I don't think I'm talking out of school, but Sandy's parents were building a house when her grandfather died suddenly. And so they changed the plans of the house to put a little flat on the back of it so Sandy's grandmother could move in.
Yeah.
And it was built and it was fine. And then a flat turned up on the other side of town where two of her mates lived. And she said, I'm going there. You kidding?
Yes.
Had a great time.
Love that. All right. I've got a letter for you.
Yep.
I'm going to read it out to you. Okay. Dear Nellie, love your podcast. Thank you. Just wanted to remind those that have come out of a long-term relationship for whatever reason that there are good times to be had no matter what your age. I met my high school sweetheart at 16, married him at 20, and remained in love for over 40 years. We had three children and I was happy as fuck. I can't believe I now say fuck. I was living my suburban life, working 3 days a week as a nurse, paying the mortgage, doting on grandchildren. To some, a little life, but to me, a happy life. My husband died at home in my arms, I'm so sorry, after 8 years of fighting cancer, and I found myself single for the first time since I was 16. I wallowed for 18 months. I'm going to put a pin in wallowed. I reckon that's fair enough. But anyway, I wallowed for 18 months and then decided that I had to drag myself out of misery and live. Fake it till you make it was my motto. I reconnected with girl pals, regained my fitness, traveled overseas on my own, and then got into the dating game. Yes, I got online and used those bloody apps, much to my grown children's dismay. None of this, I add, was easy. Surprise, at 60, I had no trouble with getting dates. I did a few stupid things that I learned from, but eventually met another very good man. I renovated a house on my own, sold my family home, and jumped in the deep end and moved to the country to live another life chapter. At 65, I eventually remarried. I'm a sucker for commitment. That second very good man, and I am happy as fuck. I walk most days and listen to your podcast. I'm grateful to you for opening up your discussions and making me realize, despite my limited life experience, I'm open to anyone who's an authentic person. Nellie, again, thank you for your authenticity and for helping me to find, if I find myself alone again, I'll be just fine. Off I fuck, in brackets, I love this line. Oh my God, I couldn't love it more.
What have you got t-shirts of that yet?
What's that?
You got t-shirts with that on it yet?
I've got a tea towel, doll. I'll send you okay. one. Oh. How cute is that? What do you hear? Tell me.
I hear just I think a lot of centeredness and reality of this is yes. how life can work if you get a bit of focus. And yeah, you're pinning the word wallowed. It almost comes across as I was a bit surprised that I didn't do anything for 18 months. Well, no, it makes perfect sense.
It does.
And it's sad and it's awful. And but the capacity to take some little risks to see what else is out there, dip your toe in the water, and maybe there's some fun to have because I'm, you know, I've still got, you know, some innings left in me.
Yeah.
Is awesome. I don't really know why you wouldn't have a crack. And, you know, if it doesn't end well, you don't find someone that is compatible or makes you happy or you feel safe around, then okay, you had a go.
Yep.
Yeah, look, I mean, this is, you know, one of the lessons for me, and it's the same lesson that we had taking our kids traveling, all that kind of stuff. We all basically want the same thing. We want, you know, a bit of closeness, a bit of attention, some safety, having some fun, a bit of escapism from the awfulness of the world, and, you know, people we can trust who are simpatico with our, you know, pretty much our beliefs and, our, you know, our ethics, our morals, and how we want to view the world.
Yeah, that's right. It's pretty awesome. Simple. I mean, it's hard, but it's simple. Like, I think the thing I hear is, God, the word resilience is overused, but far out, the resilience, you know, and that's why I put a pin in the word wallowed, because I think giving yourself 18 months to, I'm assuming by wallowed, she means be sad, grieve, fall apart. That doesn't seem that long to me. And to have the capacity to kind of go, all right, I know I'm not quite there, but I need to, when she says fake it till you make it, I think she's going, I'm not quite there, but I need to get back out in the world. And then when I act that way, the feelings will follow. Yeah. And I think that's a really important thing to consider. Sometimes we wait, oh, I'll wait until I feel like exercising to go for a walk.
Yeah.
You're not going to suddenly feel like exercising. You kind of need to go for a walk and then you get used to going for a walk. Same with dating, right? There's probably not going to be a day at 60 where you turn around and go, today's the day. But you might go to yourself, okay, I think I can handle it. I think I'm in a good enough place that if I get rejected or if, you know, any of the difficulties happen, that I'm okay. And that's the day to go, no guts, no glory, let's have a go.
Yep.
And she's done it.
She's done it and it's worked.
It's worked. And like she says, you know, even though she's gotten married again and presumably has made a long-term commitment, she's also aware enough to know if this ends for whatever reason, she's lost her husband already. If this happens again, I will be sad, but I will be okay.
Yep.
And that's a really great place to start something from.
Yep.
Because it's a choice. It's not an act of desperation.
Yeah, and it also speaks to me about a need or a desire to be with others, however that looks. I mean, you know, there's lots of examples of single older people who will just stay home or not do much or not much that's kind of meaningful in terms of their own exploration of their own society, their own community. So even just being out there, is great because the easy option is to watch daytime telly.
Yeah. Even if you're just going on dates and you never find someone that you want to have a long-term thing with, I tell you what, it'll be good for your head. It'll be good for your brain, be good for your mental health. Get out of the house.
And some of the stories you could come and tell your mates about, I went out with this bloke, my God.
You'd be the talk of the town.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Can I just also say, I think you'll relate to this. Your kids are a bit older than mine, but I tell you one thing I find hilarious, especially for progressive parents, is how conservative your kids can be. Like the idea that they're like, "Mom, what are you doing on the dating app?" Like, you go, girl. You go. I love it. Fuck the kids. They don't have to be involved in in how you get a date. You're 60 years old. You can do what you want.
Yeah, look, there's been times where my kids, our kids, have said to me, "Dad, that's really embarrassing." I said, "Mate, I used to wipe shit off your ass. So just,
Correct.
can it."
Correct. And look, that's different. You don't come home, I reckon, even when they're older kids and tell them everything that happened on the date, like have some boundaries. But the idea that you are proactively seeking a partner, or even if you're just seeking sex, good on you. You're 60, go for it. Do what you want.
No harm done.
Love it. Now, we normally finish on two segments. One is no shade on my ex, but you don't have an ex.
Well,
Not really, do you?
I do. I have one ex who slept with my best mate.
Oh, Danny. I take it back. What?
I
This is
haven't
at
seen
high
that.
school.
No, this is, I was, I reckon I was 18, 19.
Oh, mate, that's the worst. Did you keep either of them in your life?
Oh, no.
No. So you lost a friend at the same time.
Yeah, well, that I believe that friend lives overseas now and has for quite some time, so nothing lost.
Oh, how did that feel at 18?
A lot of shame, a lot of embarrassment,
Yeah.
a lot of anger towards my mate, not really much to her. I mean, she did what she did, but she I you know this is a guy I'd known throughout high school. A lot of resentment, but
Yeah.
I still went out and saw Ben and had fun, so nothing drastic. That's the worst thing, if not the
Yeah.
only thing. In fact, I couldn't even tell you where my other exes are at
Yeah,
the
that I mean that's a doozy, because I reckon, speaking of our caller, so Scott Brennan, that situation happened to him as well. And I think in his case, it was a much longer term relationship, but trying to separate out the betrayal of the friendship and the relationship is really murky. I think I'd be more devastated by the friend, to be honest.
That there was that trust that would had built up over some years, and we'd been traveling together and all that kind of stuff. Whereas this was a young woman I met at uni and had known for not that very long.
And of
So,
all the girls, Danny, that's the thing that spins me out in this situation. And it's like, same with Scott. Of all the guys, like, why? Why that one? I don't get it. There's something, I don't know. Freud would have a field day, but I'm not clever enough to psychoanalyze what's going on there, but something's going on.
don't know.
Either way, not
Don't
good. Now, I presume you're not
know.
dating and haven't
I
dated for
am
some
not.
time, but there's a TikTok trend that your kids may be across called "There are 10 but," and I encourage, this is hard for a deep thinker like yourself, but I encourage you to go as superficial as you can. So you're on a date with someone, it's going really well, the pistons are firing, everyone's happy, there's frisson, and then they do something or say something or wear something or whatever that you go, "I can't get past this, I'm out." What is it?
I love this question, Nellie, and I'll give you my top five, if that's all
Great.
right.
Hit me.
Number one, right-wing politics.
Done.
So if they can genuinely describe how and why things, were better back then, I'll listen, but I bet you they can't. Unless it's based on self-interest. Women have got it too good or that kind of stuff.
Good old days
Number
weren't that good.
oh, they're fantastic, yeah. Number two, conspiracy theorists and anti-vaxxers. I'm out. I'm gone. Not interested. Number three, victim blaming. So blaming women or the poor or people from particular race or cultures or LGBTIQ plus community or disabled or refugees or something.
So if they do something like, why don't they just get a job? That kind of vibe.
Well, why are they coming here? They should make their own country better.
What was she wearing when that happened? That kind of vibe. Gotcha. So basically, they're ideological positions yeah. are the main thing, first three.
Yeah, and certainly if it's prefaced by, I'm not racist, but.
Oh, yeah, no.
Okay. Number four is if they think that reality TV, and I'm sorry, Nelly, if they think reality TV is in fact real.
Are you about to tell me the worldwide wrestling that both of us would have enjoyed as teenagers was not real?
I'm here to tell you that maths is not real.
Oh, mate.
I know that hurts, but I'm a friend. Hurts. You've got to hear it.
That is a stake through the heart. You know that I know you're right. You also know that I will continue to watch everything.
Oh, yeah. That's why we watch the wrestling.
If they're deluded, like, you know what, to be perfectly honest, I'm the same with someone with sport, right? I yeah. totally accept. Like, if they're into sport, you go for it. I'm very happy for you to sit, watch the test match, watch the footy, whatever it is. But if you can't see the absurdity and yeah. the tribalism and all the other things of sport, then that's going to bother me.
Yeah.
But yeah, go I, consume I it. What's number five?
Number five, drum roll, please. The number five top reason is if boat shoes and pop collars on polo shirts are involved.
Oh, that's heaven. What are boat shoes?
Like deck shoes. You know, they got those that they're like loafers with the little tassels yes. on the front.
I know exactly what you mean. From Below Deck, reality show. I know exactly what you mean. I'm with you. I am with that. You know, the shoes that I can't stand is those, you know, they were on The Sopranos a lot. So they're really shiny leather shoes and they kind of come to a point, but then they've got a straight edge at the toe.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, they were big in the 90s, those things. Yeah.
Cute, but they're big and like literally big. Unnecessarily. Yeah. Okay, great. So if they're right wing, if they are deluded, if they're into conspiracy theories, and if they look like a Ralph Lauren poster. Out.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you're Go a on. Fussy bugger, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. Guess how old I am.
Oh, Danny Blay, what a delight. Will you please come back on so I can get more?
I'd love to.
More questions for you. And do you have some means for us to find you?
Tricky. If you want to contact the Women's Health Victoria or Our Watch, then they can find me. I'm on some of the socials, not the naughty ones.
Yeah.
LinkedIn, Facebook, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I would say for people listening though, particularly if they're in workplaces and they want to do that kind of training that you do, they should find you. Right? You're a yeah. consultant now.
Yeah, yeah. And there are a bunch of us who are providing that kind of training. You know, there's a lot, we're doing a lot of gender equity in the workplace training as well, which is proving to be really useful and can be quite fun as well for participants. So,
yeah,
Women's Health Victoria and Our Watch, hit them up.
Perfect. Thank you so much, my friend. I hope to see you soon.
Thanks, Nelly.
Oh, actually, can I just say, as an aside, I forgot to say this. Originally, we were going to record on Sunday, and I love this as a modern-day middle-aged progressive text conversation. You said, as I believe, at least straightish, mostly straight man, I can't come on Sunday because I'm going to the Pride March. And I was like, I couldn't love you more.
Right. You have to come with us 1 year. It's
look, I have
fun.
Been before. I find it a little bit overwhelming. It's a bit hot. It's all those like it's me being an old lady. But yes, it's fabulous, and you enjoy. And I hope to see pictures of you at the Pride March on Facebook.
Okay.
All right. I'll Thanks, mate.
See you. Right.
Take care.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice, dear Nelly. Yeah, some help would be nice, dear Nelly. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly. When you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through. Too late to start again, dear Nelly.
deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to Dear Nelly. Now, don't be shy. I would love to hear your questions and comments. To send me a recording or an email, go to nellythomas.com and follow the links. It's super easy, and you might hear me talk about your question in a future episode. Huge thanks to producer Sam Peterson from the Producer Boy Creative Production team, and to producer Faye Younger, who in addition to being an excellent human, is also a brilliant real estate buyer's advocate and can be found at youngerhill.com. Thanks to Acast and all the team. And lastly, to you. Without the listeners, I'm just a middle-aged mole talking shit to no one. Please rate, review, and consider subscribing for $5 a month for a bonus episode and to help me keep the lights on. And tell your bloody mates, would ya? I'd really appreciate it. Love yous.